But it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. It warmed up a little bit here, got up into the 20s, comparatively warm for us, comfortable for us, and people in Lake Wobegon went around with their jackets unzipped, you know, their jackets just kind of, you know, look cool, nonchalant, and so on, because it's coming up. It was coming up toward Valentine's Day, which was Wednesday. Usually Valentine's Day is when the weather starts to turn towards warmer, but for some reason it turned really cold on St. Valentine's Day. Don't know if you want to read too much into that. On the other hand, if it did indicate something, you wouldn't want to be the last to know. But difficult day for people who are single and don't want to be like Darlene down at the Chatterbox Cafe. Been looking for somebody for a while in all the worst places and was thinking about it all day, went home, got into her Barker lounger, had a glass of Jack Daniels and fell asleep watching television. She's kind of waiting for the phone to ring, you know, just hoping somebody might call. Didn't plan on it, but just thought out of the blue on St. Valentine's Day. And then the phone did ring, and it was Dorothy at the Chatterbox saying it was 7 o'clock in the morning, and are you coming into work? A little bit warmer, but still cold enough to keep the ice in great shape, and so the skating rink had just been beautiful, and people going down and skating and skating and skating this week, getting in the last of it before spring comes, which spring will come soon. This last chance to be graceful in a way you can't be on dry land. On skates, you can glide and soar, and you can make moves, circular moves, that you couldn't make on a floor unless you were wearing tights and a tutu. And a lot of older guys wouldn't like to do that. But on the ice, in dim light, you can be a bird, you can fly for a little while, until you have to go back to becoming a caribou or being a Holstein or whoever you may be. Lent, beginning this next week, 40 days of Lent, and on Ash Wednesday, Father Wilmer down at Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility will be there. People want to come down and have a smudge of ash put on their foreheads, and he will tell you from whence you have come and where you will go. You could go to the Lutheran Church for a second opinion, but it will be close to that. It's a gorgeous time to go out ice fishing, and I was out this last week, my only venture, with my good friend Lance from high school. I love to go out and fish in a fish house out on the ice. The only danger is that you might catch something, and he'd swallow the hook, so you wouldn't be able to get the hook out of him and throw him back in, and then you'd have this fish that you'd have to clean, and that would be miserable. I avoid that by using licorice as a bait, which works well, really, really, really strong licorice. My friend Lance, I went to grade school and high school with him. We've carried on this lifelong rivalry, which is interesting. A person could write a novel about this, really. It's a rivalry that shaped our lives going back to when we were kids and we competed in spelling bees in grade school. And he and I were always the last two standing. And I beat him the sixth grade spell-off with annihilate, which he did not know, and I spelled correctly, and he was crestfallen. And it set in motion this tremendous rivalry between us. He was a much better athlete, and because he was, then I couldn't compete in athletics, don't you see? I had to pretend to look down on athletics and to become a kind of pseudo-intellectual, although I loved sports, but because he was so good, and he was so good at golf, I had to give up golf. I couldn't play golf lest I should be inferior to him, and I had to take up tennis, which I didn't like nearly as much. But there, But there you are. In the 10th grade, I wrote a sonnet for Mrs. Fleischman's English class that was better than Lance's sonnet. And so that was the end of Lance's interest in literature. And I was more or less trapped then into a career as a writer by the fact that I had beaten him. But he would never again be interested in poetry or fiction because I had beat him that one time. I was in college. I was elected Young Lutheran of the Year, which was kind of a joke because I wasn't a Lutheran, and I just went to the Lutheran church there on campus in order to impress a girl who went there, and I was going all out to impress her and singing loud, you know, and going Sundays and Wednesday nights and I knelt during prayer, which Lutherans did not do back then, but I knelt. Everybody else was sitting. I knelt down. I just thought it was, you know, kind of a showy thing to do, and then, you know, everybody else felt they had to kneel during the prayers as well. And then I witnessed in front of the Lutheran church, and I witnessed to how the Lord had exercised power over my life and helped me to get in control of powerful carnal urges. It was the only way I could tell her about this was to testify how sometimes late at night carnal urges would just grab hold of me, and I would perspire and I would howl like a dog, and I would, my whole body would tremble, you know, like a man on a fuzzy tree, and I would fall on the floor and I would roll around with these powerful carnal urges, and I'd say, "Satan, get off me," I'd have to say, and the Lord gave me the triumph temporarily. I was watching her as I was testifying, and she was pretty impressed by all of this, and my becoming Young Lutheran of the Year, this was a sham completely. But that is what drove Lance away from the church. And he became an atheist right then. You know, not just an agnostic. He just went all the way. He came back to Lake Wobegon, and he's been very successful, and earned a lot of money as a venture capitalist, which meant, therefore, that I had to pretend to take no interest in money and, you know, pretend to be a more spiritual person. But he came back. I didn't know he was back. I was looking at the candy display in Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery, and I was trying to decide between the candy with the caramel filling and the candy with the walnuts, and I had just about made a choice, and then this big hand reached in over my shoulder, and that was Lance, and he grabbed the caramel candy, and which was the one I wanted, of course. But we talked, and we thought we'd go out ice fishing. His uncle has a fish house out there on the ice, and so we went out. Lance had a bottle of single malt scotch. I don't drink anymore. This is one more way of my getting one up on him, is by quitting drinking and kind of being showy about it, you know, and ostentatious and talking about how it's not that hard. And there he was, and we dropped our lines into the holes, and we sat, and he was drinking, and we heard a dog bark, and we remembered Mr. Peterson's dog, his English Springer Spaniel, Gunner, who his wife bought for him to go with him out fishing, because the dog was an AA dog, and the dog could sniff alcohol, and the dog would go after you if you drank, and he would clear bottles and glasses off a table with his tail. He was a very smart dog. Well, Mr. Peterson got around this. He loved to go out and drink in the fish house, of course, and he got around it by training the dog to dive in through the hole in the ice and go down and catch fish. It was an English Springer Spaniel. It was a retriever. And he got really good at it, and he'd say, "Go get him, Gunner," and Gunner would go down the hole and dive, and while he was down there, then of course Mr. Peterson would take a snort of scotch, and the dog would come up and throw this big fish, a walleye, on the ice and go back down for more. He'd go down for four, five, six big fish. He was a tremendous fishing dog until one day he got the old Lunker Muskie, Pete, that old fish with the baits hanging out of his lower lip, the big, enormous musky, and it was too big a fish for him, and they got in a fight, and they were rolling around down on the bottom, silt, big clouds of it coming up through the water, and they were down there for the longest time, Gunner and this big fish. And when Gunner finally surfaced, he was missing his right hind leg. The fish had taken it. And so Mr. Peterson rigged him up with a wooden leg, and the dog learned how to walk with a wooden leg. But you could tell all that summer the dog was just itching to get back on the ice. The dog was just itching for a fight. He'd walk up and down by the lake, looking out across the water, looking for a fish to surface. When it snowed and it got cold, he got really excited, and when the lake froze over, then he was just beside himself. And as soon as Mr. Peterson could get that fish house out there, then Gunner wanted to go out fishing. Well, he took him out. He had to tie a rope to his collar because the dog was just hysterical, leaping up and down and barking and so on. They got into the fish house, and he tied him up to the fish house so he wouldn't dive into the hole. And Mr. Peterson got his bait ready to start fishing. And before he could put the bait in, this big snout came up the hole in the ice. The big musky Pete was there, and he was looking around, and he saw Gunner, and he dove back down. He dove back down, and then his tail came up and wagged in the hole in the ice, a sign of contempt, if you ever saw contempt. That dog just went wild, and he dove towards the hole, but he was tied to the fish house. He couldn't quite get there, and the fish went swimming away. You could see him under the ice, and the dog gave chase. The dog went out the door of the fish house, and he pulled that fish house at the end of that rope all the way across the lake, chasing that big fish who was just right ahead of him, just under the ice, just trying to lead him on. And then the fish turned around and he swam back the other way, and Gunner followed him. Mr. Peterson, three sheets to the wind, in the fish house, falling all over as they were being towed across the ice by this wild dog. And then the fish stuck his snout up the hole again, and the dog just bust loose of that rope, and he dove at that fish, and he grabbed hold of him, and he hauled him up on the ice, and they rolled around there for a while. And that fish was just too big for Gunner. He was just an English Springer. And that fish swallowed that dog, just swallowed that dog. It was an ugly thing to see, just the tail and that wooden leg sticking out of that old muskie's mouth. And there they were on the ice, and they died, the two of them, right there. It was an amazing thing to see. They got a canvas bag, and they weighted it down with bricks, and they put the fish and the dog inside. The two enemies become one in death, and they dropped it down through the hole in the ice, and that was that until the next year. I don't know much about ichthyology. I barely know how to spell it, but the next year, there was a different species of fish that showed up in that lake. Nobody had ever seen this before. It was a variety of dogfish, and it had a black nose on it, and it had a kind of a longish tail, and it had nails on the fins. It had sharp toenails on the fins, and it was a fish that could smell whiskey. Lance and I were talking about this, and he was sitting there drinking and drinking, and we were just talking, and we didn't hear the scratching sound under the ice. These dogfish will go after people if they're out there on the ice and drinking, and they'll scratch away from the underside of that ice, and those nails are sharp. We were sitting there and talking, and he was bragging, you know, about how he was retired, and he had all this money, and he and his wife, for whom we competed, he and I competed for Maureen, and he won Maureen because he asked me once how to spell naive right there in study hall, and Maureen was sitting right ahead of us, and she was a beautiful, beautiful woman, and he asked me if I knew how to spell naive. I know the word naive, but I was a reader, you see. I wasn't a speaker. I was a reader. So I thought it was pronounced nave. Naive. I said N-Y-E-V-E. Oh, they just laughed and laughed and laughed, and she married him. Anyway, He was talking about how they'd gone down to Rio for carnival and what a wonderful time they'd had. And they were dancing the samba in the streets. And, you know, Portuguese, not a problem. And Maureen, even though she is our age, she danced topless in the street. And what a beautiful woman she was. And he was just, you know, trying to arouse my competitive instincts. And, you know, I talked a little bit about how I would love to retire, but I can't retire because there's so many shut-ins who listen to the show and they count on me to bring sunshine into their lives. And so I'm going on like this, kind of the, you know, the young Lutheran of the year mode. And we didn't notice that these dogfish were scratching away at the ice right below this until that suddenly that ice started to tilt. It started to tilt, and we got out of there as fast as we could, out the door, just as that ice fish house went down through the ice, put away by AA dogfish who were watching over us. We got out that door as fast as we could. We were in our stocking feet. We had taken off our jackets. It was cold out there, and in the surprise and the shock, we had each of us wet our pants, and it was cold out there, and your bare feet, you know, and when your pants are wet and there's a long way to shore, we didn't feel as if we could knock on other fish houses, you know, we'd have to explain the whole thing that happened, so we had to walk all the way home. But spring is coming because Lent is coming up this next week. Spring is on its way, and now we just have a few days to think about what we're going to give up for Lent. I imagine he might give up alcohol. I hope he does. I intend to give up dishonesty, to give up lying, but just for 40 days. We'll see how it goes. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, all the children are above average.